of us began Sunday school with a story highlighting curiosity. In Genesis, right after the world is created, we have Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and the Lord God instructs, "You may freely eat of every tree in the garden, but of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat. For the day that you eat of it, you shall die." So we can imagine that Adam and Eve are there. At a minimum, they're pretty intrigued. The serpent entices Eve even more. "Try the fruit." So in curiosity, Eve does. She tries it and she shares the fruit with Adam. And there were going to be consequences. And the Lord wishes upon Eve pangs, increased pangs of childbirth and more. So that's one story where curiosity was a bit of a challenge. And earlier, our friend Curious George was told once again by the man with the yellow hat to stay and wait for him. And yet he goes off and explores. He's a monkey of action. And he's up for adventure. And he doesn't always anticipate the consequences or the risks or the impacts to others. When I read all those different versions at the library, I mean, he's skiing down mountains, tripping snowboarders. He does all sorts of things. But it's yet in these stories that we hear the unexpected positive results that can come when we delve into actions that are driven by our curious natures. From Adam to Eve to Curious George, we see the risks and the rewards of curiosity. Because as human beings, we are a species that is sort of programmed to ask why. Why is the sky blue? Why does a donut taste good? How did they ever build cathedrals? And I had this one preoccupying curiosity, which I really ever never actually admitted. It was more of a how question. How did they get the caramel into a Milky Way bar? Perplexed me for years. In his book called Why, What Makes Us Curious, author Mary Olivio, he considers the different ways we are curious. Not all curiosity is the same. It's not just like a one-flavor thing. Some of it can be we're just fascinated by novelty. We want to learn more about the top of Mount Everest, or what is weird at the bottom of the ocean, and what's puzzling. We also like things that are a little really strange. And I can remember my kids on Christmas morning, one of the staples for about 10 years is every year Guinness would publish the new Book of World Records, and there'd be pictures and everything else. And they were just fascinated, as we all were, to look through there. But there's also a more generic version of curiosity, the sort of that appetite we have for knowledge, of trying to piece together the bigger picture. And then what is it, if those are sort of some types of curiosity, what is it in our bodies? What's that motivating factor of curiosity? I think sometimes we're trying to solve something. We're looking for a specific link. I think I've shared with virtually everybody in the world that I love the genealogy pieces, and often I'm like trying to find not only one document, but some part of a story from my past. And recently, when I could have been doing many, many chores that were on my unfinished business list, I was inside playing on Ancestry.com, and I stumbled on my grandfather's baptismal certificate. I'd sort of looked for it years ago, and here it was online. Now this virtual thing, he and his siblings all baptized at a church in New York City, the Swedish Lutheran Church. Bam. My curiosity had led me to a whole set of new stories. So there's that type of sort of do the puzzle crossword pieces. I think we also sometimes aren't looking for anything specific. We follow our curiosity out of boredom. We sometimes are in a place where we're hoping for something to surprise us. We refresh our email and we just wonder what might be there. Or look at that text. How many people, if a text comes in, can can patiently wait to see what was just pinged to you? How many people here actually pretty much right away look at the text? Really? Like two? Yeah, right. Okay. So curiosity can come to us when we're just in that poking around thing. The great writers, the novelists, the playwrights, they know that the dilemma will pique our curiosity. It's going to pull us into reading the novel or the play. What I see in common in all these ways of looking at curiosity is curiosity sort of draws our attention to a general area, and then we start asking why or maybe how. In our curious modes, I think we're doing two things. We're paying attention, we're in a super good state of alert, and we're open to receive something. Something we don't know in that state is likely to be revealed to us. If we're curious about something that matters to us, it's in the revealing of something new that we might actually be changed. Historically, people worried about curiosity. It could be dangerous. If you were poking your nose where it didn't belong, where you might disturb the order of things, it was considered risky. There was a lot of value placed on communities on having predictability. The rules and societal boundaries were the norms of safety. If you were too curious, you might disrupt the order. And alas, we have the Adam and Eve debacle. And I just, before we go into the positive aspects of curiosity, I want to remind folks that the downsides of curiosity are not unheard today. Think of it not when you're the curious one, but when someone's curious about you. What if people are tracking your phone calls, hacking your emails? Livio also tells us there's times we have sort of a morbid curiosity about destruction and violence. So while I'm going to go forward as a cheerleader for curiosity, I think we need to remember that there are ethical boundaries on curiosity. There are limits as to what your curiosity does to another or what their curiosity does to you. So as we delve into the positive curiosity, it's interesting to know why. People go, curiosity killed the...
Yeah, I need to wake you guys up today.
We're going to do exercises in a minute here. One of the book that I looked through a lot on this was by this guy, Livio, and he talks a lot about Leonardo da Vinci. Clearly a man of curiosity, and he really looks at how and why he was curious. He had interests on many subjects, he was a quick learner, he had great observation skills, probably not a surprise. But one of the other patterns he had is once he delved into something, he was willing to just abandon it. He didn't stick with things forever. He trusted his instinct to take him to what most be interested. What he fancied was what motivated him. Da Vinci was a compulsive note taker. He was always trying to put things together. He loved the complexity of things, and he could see all the interrelationships. One of the areas that he just got obsessively curious about was the human heart. Not the love side of the heart, just physically how it worked. And he could look at the artistic curves in the heart, imagine the physics, imagine the purpose of the heart, what it was doing. And that just soaked him deeply. And then he'd go on. One of the things that he was known for is he was willing to experience things himself and challenge the norms, the statements of the authorities. He didn't get stuck. And he was also actually aware that curiosity had a positive and a shadow side. We don't have a lot of writings about what was in his own heart, but here's something that he did write. Having wandered some distance among gloomy rocks, I came to the entrance of a great cavern, in front of which I stood some time, astonished and unaware of such a thing. Bending my back into an arch, I rested my left hand on my knee and held my right hand over my downcast and contracted eyebrows, often bending one way and another to see whether I could discover anything inside the cavern. And this being forbidden by the deep darkness within and having remained there some time, two contrary emotions arose for me, fear and desire. Fear of the threatening dark cavern and desire to see whether there were any marvelous things in it. So curiosity comes with apprehension and fear, at least if in fact we're acting on that curiosity. Curious George does not just sit around and think curious thoughts. But when I've asked folks, what I often do before a sermon is I run around like a crazy person. Hey, what do you think of curiosity? What's going on? What are you thinking about? I've heard only positive. I've heard no negative. I hear that curiosity keeps us young. Curiosity keeps life interesting. I love to learn. I love to read. I love to travel. And I've been had the sense that a lot of the curiosity that I'm hearing about is what I call sort of curiosity of amusement. There's nothing bad, and it's great, and it can take us lots of places. I think what we might want to think about is when we ask why, are we open to being changed by the answer? Can we consider curiosity not a passive observer sport where we Google till our heart's content, but can we embrace the uncertainty that comes with curiosity? Because I think curiosity can be pleasurable, the aha, wow moments, but it also can cause discomfort. When we ask, when we see something and we're curious and we say, if that is true, then nothing else I've believed makes sense. Are we curious from a safe distance, or do we embrace our all-in kind of curiosity? Do we have that explorer's true willingness to change our own assumptions? A few weeks ago, I attended the Better Angels full-day workshop down in Easton. I think we've had members here that have attended. I think you had a summer discussion about it last summer. And it was a chance to look at our political world and try to step into the shoes of another. There were 16 participants, so we sat in the middle at a table for a very structured full-day workshop. Eight of us were identified as liberal-leaning, eight conservative-leaning. There was no direct way that that had to be. It wasn't a specific adherence to any candidates or anything. But the exercises for one full day were framed around being curious. Could you be curious about the assumptions and the hopes and the dreams and the frustrations and worries of somebody who had a different worldview? We had ways that one group could ask questions of the other in what they set up to be a safe format. It was a highly structured day with trained facilitators, and they tried their darndest to keep us in a curious mode, to make us ready to learn and truly learn. One of the other assumptions of the day is you are not there to change the minds of others or to have them convince you to change. So they set the stage perfectly. It was about honing curiosity and wondering and asking to learn how to say, tell me more. But it was hard. It was difficult. Virtually nobody, including your minister, could follow the rules. We don't like our worldviews to be challenged. We more want to collect evidence, either to show we're right or pretty right, or maybe adapt our views a little bit. And it was challenging to answer, to sit in curiosity when I heard assumptions that I declared as flatly wrong or wrong-headed, and to not want to convince and debate. And yet I was sitting there with other members of the community who were raising kids and raising grandchildren and have jobs in Easton and are part of a couple organizations I knew. I didn't even know prior to this what their worldview was. It hadn't come up in knowing them for 5 years. So we were challenged to spend a whole day in this curious mode with the ground rules outlined, and it was hard. Because I think if you're going to embody curiosity, to actually trust it, to say, I am going to be open to what I find, Leonardo da Vinci kind of open, we have to let go of our own resistance. I think that's why it's so hard. We love the possibility, the positive side, the satisfaction of what it feels like when everything comes together. And yet, we don't always really want to have our world shaken. There was a book on NPR this week called Wayfinding, and it was talking a little bit about how human beings navigate the world. And the author talks about a time she was totally disoriented. She followed her GPS in the middle of New Mexico, ended up in some place unrelated to some hot spring that she thought she was going to be at. And yet the place was gorgeous. It was beautiful. It was breathtaking. But if you don't know where you are you willing to let go enough to enjoy that moment? Think about that. She quotes in the book Audrey Niffiger, and she talks about what are our different reactions to being lost. Panic is one, that sense of not knowing where we are, and not knowing our grounding and our assumptions and not being firm. But another is to surrender, to allow the fact that you've misplaced yourself to change how you experience the world. Because I think there are times we're physically lost. There are times when we're emotionally in unfamiliar areas. There's times when our own grounding is not serving us well. So I think curiosity is a place where we're invited to use our imagination. For folks that have studied the beginner's mind, it's that putting yourself back in a place where you reduce your assumptions. For those who have taught children the mindset of Montessori schools, when we delve into the unknowns and we're always trying to solve something, we might not be back quite far enough. Even though our reward sensors get tickled a little bit when we can make some sense of something, might we step back further and ask why? Because I do think we live in a world where the images can feel daunting and puzzling and angering. We want to get back to something that feels safe. We long for a world of mature communications, and yet it's hard. So Livio asks this question: how might curiosity be a remedy for fear? I've sat with that question. Imagine we're in that forest. We see the crossroads and we only see two paths, and we feel stuck and we feel scared. We don't like the options. How might curiosity take us back further? Help us see more adaptive solutions? How might we release our self-assuredness and not jump to what and how and where to go, but to keep asking the why question? I think this is where Da Vinci, he really challenged his assumptions. In his brilliance, he connected the unrelated, the curious George in us that can never stay still. So in your work as a congregation, where might that serve you? At your annual meeting today, there's going to be a chance to consider new paths, to wonder together the why of this gathering, the why of this congregation, and the ways that curiosity has brought you together over the years. There's a chance to wonder about where some of the challenges might be ripe for some good why questions. Because I think, what if in the why, that's the place of hope, the chance for connection? What if in our most frustrated times, we keep in our toolbox the courage of honest, open why questions? and stay open for the surprises to come, and to be willing to act in accordance with new paths. Where might curiosity offer us a different freedom from our own world? What might we find in the practice of why on the matters, on those things that matter to us the most? May it be so.